and the thought that you expressed not only in your prayer but even before it. And it's just so very true. And I hope that we can be excited about the gospel and be excited about the kingdom that we have the great privilege of being a part of. In fact, as Isaac was making his comments, I couldn't help but think of Paul's concern about the Ephesians and wanting them to really grasp the great benefit of God's kingdom. Ephesians 1, verse 18, I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened so that you may know what is the hope of his calling, what are the riches of the glory of his inheritance in the saints, and what is the surpassing greatness of his power toward us who believe. Just really, really appreciate the things that Isaac had to say. It's good to see everyone this evening. This morning we talked a little bit about the sad times that are just a regular part of life, that are normal. We know that we're all going to be faced with times of travail. And we talked this morning about some things to keep in mind as we go through those difficult times, and to keep things in perspective, to remember our blessings, to not become self-centered and focused upon ourselves, and instead reach out toward other people, and also to have the attitude of the apostles as demonstrated in Acts chapter 5, where they considered themselves worthy to suffer in this life for the name of Jesus Christ. So those are some things that I hope were helpful to you this morning. I'd like to talk with you tonight about just a few additional points that time did not allow me to discuss in this morning's lesson. And I'd like to begin tonight by noting with you this psalm, Psalm 38, verses 1 through 3. Here David the psalmist says, O Lord, rebuke me not in your wrath, and chasten me not in your burning anger. For your arrows have sunk deep into me, and your hand has pressed down on me. There is no soundness in my flesh because of your indignation. There is no health in my bones because of my sin. This is a passage of Scripture that talks about the fact that sometimes the circumstances in life that bring us sorrow and difficulty, they are the result of sins that we have committed. They are the result of choices that we have made. And I want to say to you, as we think about this tonight, that certainly I want no one to think, and the Bible doesn't teach, that all of the sad things that happen in our life must be the direct result of some sin that we have committed. That's not true. In fact, you recall that story in John 2, the opening verse there, where there was the young man born blind, and the crowds were asking Jesus, Jesus, who sinned that this man was born blind? Himself, his parents, who's responsible? Who committed sin that caused this? And Jesus indicated neither one of those options was correct. So certainly we need to understand that there are times in life where sad things happen and bring us sorrow through no fault of our own. But on the other hand, as this psalm reminds us, sometimes the sorrows of life are due to choices that we have made. Sometimes poor choices that we have made. In fact, the Apostle Paul made the statement in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 7 that we need to not be deceived. Whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. And so as we're thinking about sad times in our life and dealing with those things in a good and proper way, I think it would be remiss if we gave no consideration to the fact that sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, the sad circumstances in our life are the result of poor choices that we have made, where we're just reaping what we've sown. And if we don't recognize that, if we don't learn from that, then our circumstance is even more dismal than it otherwise would have been. So I want us to think about that. You know, there are a lot of people who have a hard time with this. There's a lot of people who go against what the Bible teaches, and they live their lives in an immoral way, and then they have bad consequences as a result of that. And I've had people express their anger as if somehow life has just dealt them some kind of a raw deal. And yet when you look at the situation that they're in, you can see that it's the direct result of them not having followed what God taught. Sometimes people, and I've had them say this to me, they're even angry at God because God would bring this upon them, or this kind of sorrow has come upon them. Or sometimes it's parents who are upset about some calamity that has befallen their children, and yet the reason why is because their children have made sinful decisions. And so they reap what they've sown. And that's the very thing the Bible is warning us about. And God is emphatic about that. And sometimes we just tend not to hear those warnings. Sometimes the only way that God seems to be able to get through to us is by allowing us to reap those sad consequences of our actions. And hopefully that gets our attention. And maybe compels us to curb our behavior, to repent and turn in the right path. C.S. Lewis has a famous quote. I love this statement. He said, "Pain is God's megaphone to rouse a deaf world." That's a good statement. Pain is God's megaphone to rouse a deaf world. We live in a world where people are deaf to the concept of sin. People are oblivious to the need for God in their lives. They give no regard for the resurrected Jesus and for His being that eternal King who's reigning on that heavenly throne even now. They give no thought to that, and they go throughout their lives in utter disregard of what Jesus has taught. And how can God get through to people? Sometimes the only way that God can get through to the hardened hearts of men, to the deafened ears of men, is to shout out them in the only way that He can and rouse them out of their stupor by making them suffer the sad, painful consequences in this earthly life of the sins that they make, of the poor, sinful choices that they make. And so what I want us to think about as we are going through sad times, to maybe stop and think, okay, is it possible that maybe what I'm going through, at least to some degree, in some way, to some extent, is it possible that I'm reaping what I've sown? Again, I emphasize, I'm not suggesting that that's always going to be the case. Sometimes the things that we go through are just the accidents of life. But sometimes, if we'll stop and think about it, it may be that we'll determine, yeah, this is what I'm going through because of the poor choice that I made that was against God's teaching. Or maybe the people that we're so concerned about and what they are going through, maybe the reason why they're going through that is because of the sinful decisions that they made. And so we need to learn from those things. I want us to think about the statement that the wise sage made in Proverbs 19, verse 3. He said, "The foolishness of man subverts his way, and his heart rages against the Lord." Think about that. The foolishness of man subverts his way. But what's he do? Well, his heart rages against the Lord. That's kind of the way we are so often. We don't want to accept responsibility for our wrong decisions. We don't want to have to suffer the consequences of those things. And so what do? We get angry and we get mad even at God and rage at God because of what I'm going through. And so often, it's the result of our own sinful choices. But a related point to that. Sometimes it's not necessarily that we've committed some overt sin. It's not necessarily that here was God's teaching and we just turned our back on God's teaching. Sometimes it's not so much that. Sometimes it's poor choices in regard to just decisions we make about life that are just unwise, that are just foolish. Maybe not sinful, but really foolish. And if we had thought about those things ahead of time, if we'd given enough attention to those things, we wouldn't have made those decisions. I want you to think with me about this passage in Proverbs chapter 6. It's a simple proverbial statement. It's almost a parable that the sage gives here in Proverbs chapter 6, beginning with verse 6. And it has to do with ants, of all things. Go to the ant, O sluggard. Observe her ways and be wise, which, having no chief, officer, or ruler, prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision in the harvest. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, you say, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and your poverty will come upon you like a vagabond and your need like an armed man. Isn't that a parable? A powerful little proverb. Look at those ants that you just see every day and get angry because they're in your yard every day and step over them every day. And look at them. They don't have anybody overseeing them. There's no ruler or taskmaster that's overseeing them. But all those individual ants, they go about doing what they do, and they're scourging for food and finding something and storing it up and preparing it in case the calamity happens. And they're ready for that. And yet we as human beings, we as the wise creation of God, made in His image with an intellect and a rationality and all of that, we don't prepare ourselves. No, we're lazy about things. We're sluggards. We don't prepare for the rainy day. And then what happens? Well, we have the calamity come upon us. And then we go, woe is me. Well, you know, look at what happened to me. And yet what the wise man is saying is, that's something that you could have foreseen and prevented and prepared for, but you didn't do it. And somebody says, no, couldn't foresee this. No, the calamity that's happened to me, sometimes maybe it's a financial kind of calamity. Now, you know, this and the bills and all that happened here, well, this just came upon me, and we had, you know, this problem happened, the air conditioner went out, you know, and all, unforeseen, and so there was no way for me to foresee that. That's not true. I didn't know when it was going to go out. I didn't know when this was going to break down. I didn't know, yeah, you didn't know when that was going to happen, but did you know that it was going to happen sooner or later? Sure you did. Because that's what happens in life. And I'm just as guilty of this as anybody else, believe me. But sometimes those sad circumstances that we're in, they're the result of the poor choices that we have made, and we should have been able to foresee those things. We might not be able to foresee all the details, but we should be able to foresee that those things happen in life. It's part of life. But what do? We blind ourselves to those things. We delude ourselves into thinking, well, you know, it's just going to all work out and whatever. And so we don't prepare. And the wise man says the ants are smarter than you are. And then we go, woe is me because of my sad circumstances in life. Sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, the sad things that we deal with in life are the result of our own choices, that were foolhardy, that were risky, that we should have known better, that we're just not wise. And so we need to learn from that. When we're reaping maybe the consequences, maybe not of sinful actions, but maybe just reaping the consequences of foolishness, a lack of wisdom. In that time of sorrow, we need to reflect on that and learn from that and gain some wisdom from that. It might be wisdom that comes from the school of hard knocks, but my goodness, if you don't learn it then, you really are in sad shape. So these are some things that I think are important for us to think about. Sometimes our problems may be due to our own poor choices. We need to examine it in those times of sorrow. Was there something that I maybe should learn from this? Some poor decisions that I made? Or something else I think we ought to consider. Times of sorrow, on a very positive note, can produce spiritual growth. Now, this is not the kind of point that we're anxious to think about when we're first hit with sorrow. You know, when somebody goes through some calamity or it comes upon them, you know. The last thing you want somebody to say to you when they come to console you is, hey, this is going to really be better for you to have to go through all that. You know, well, that's not what you want to hear. I'm in misery here. Can't you tell I'm suffering? Okay. But at some point, we do need to realize what the Bible is trying to teach us about the fact that times of sorrow can produce spiritual growth. And this is kind of the way God has worked things, that we can gain some benefit even from times of sadness. In Ecclesiastes chapter 7, in verse 2, he says, it is better to go to a house of mourning than to go to a house of feasting, because that is the end of every man, and the living takes it to heart. I mean, basically what he's saying is, it's good for us to go to a funeral, because we learn something from that. It's a time of sorrow. It's a time of sadness. It's not pleasant, but sometimes going through the unpleasant things of life can teach us something valuable and remind us of something valuable. In this particular verse, he's talking about the fact that we're reminded of our own ultimate end, that we are frail and mortal beings, and one day we're going to be the guest of honor at the funeral. And we need to be reminded of that. But the lesson really goes on even further than that. He says in verse 3, sorrow is better than laughter. For when a face is sad, a heart may be happy. The mind of the wise is in the house of mourning, while the mind of fools is in the house of pleasure. Do you appreciate what he's talking about there? The mind of the wise is going to be in the house of mourning. But the mind of fools, they only care about the house of pleasure. That's kind of the way foolish people are. All they want is a good time. They don't want to think about anything negative. They don't want to be in any kind of negative circumstance. I just want to have fun. I just want to do this. I want everything to be rosy. And so they just run to the house of pleasure and all that. And what the wise man says here, the problem with that is you don't learn anything there. You have fun. You have a good time. But you don't learn anything. You're not made a better person. But when you're in that house of sorrow, when you're going through that time of mourning, there's a silver lining in all of that. Now, you maybe don't want to hear it at the moment, but eventually you're going to see that there's a benefit to you for going through that time of sorrow. You know, when we're hit with these things in life, we talked this morning about the different kinds of things that can hit us. When we are just brought to our knees with some of the travails of life, it reminds us of how frail we are. It reminds us of the fact that we really are not in control of our own lives. We're not in control of this world. And we have this delusion where we think that, well, I'm in charge and nobody can tell me what to do. And I'm in charge of my life. I'm in control of things. I've got my plans. I've got my goals. I've got this is my aim here. We're going to accomplish this task and all that. And then life just brings us back to reality. And that big bubble over our head just pops. But we need that from time to time. Because we need to not live in this delusionary mindset that thinks that we're really in control. It's a marvelous statement that is made in James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. Where he again says something very challenging to us, something that is a little bit maybe even odd at first that he would word it in this way. But this is what he says, James chapter 1, verse 2. Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials. Consider it all joy when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance have its perfect result, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. Now, we may not like it that this is the way life is. We may wish that the world was somehow a different place, and so we can imagine some fairyland existence where it's not this way. But what this passage teaches us, for us to be that whole and complete and fully mature person, we need those times of sorrow to have to go through that time of endurance and patience and develop all of that so we can grow. And it's for that reason that James says, when you're going through that time of sorrow, you need to consider it as all joy. Now again, James is not trying to teach us to all be masochists here and, you know, oh, hurt me, you know, I love travail, bring on the sad times, Lord, you know. No, he's not saying that. But after we've been rocked by whatever the sorrow is, he's saying reflect on that and realize that there's a joyousness about this in the fact that here is your opportunity to have your faith put to the test and to grow. It's just like if you're trying to grow in your in bodybuilding or increase your muscle mass or all that, or your physical strength or your stamina, you have to tax yourself. You have to use those weights and tax those muscles. You have to task your cardiovascular system. You've got to be through that crucible in order to then grow and be able to endure. And so James says that ultimate good result is what should give you some joy here, even though you're having to go through these times of trial. And we need to remember that. We need to remember that when we're going through times of sorrow. Such a great statement in Psalm 46, verse 10, where here God utters these words. He says, "Be still and know that I am God." Think about those words from the Lord. Be still and know that I am God. We need to remember that we're not in charge, but He is. And times of sorrow remind us of that. Sometimes they remind us of that in a very stark way. They grab us, like C.S. Lewis said, God's rousing us because we're deaf and not listening. But we need to recognize God is in charge. He's the Lord. He is God. We're not. And in those times of sorrow, it reminds us of the fact that we really don't have, not even the control of this life, we don't even really understand the future. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going on. We don't even understand what God is doing in His plan. And so often in our times of sorrow, we start, as we said a moment ago, raging against God. And what we really need to understand is that this should remind me, I don't really even understand what God is doing, but God is in charge, and He's going to work things out. And He's going to accomplish good things. Let Him be God. Remind yourself in those times of sorrow, He's in charge. And when you recognize that, when you come to accept that, there's a kind of peace that envelops your soul. And that's called spiritual growth. And that's where we're a better person. And we're a stronger person. And the only reason why we have become stronger is because God allowed us to go through that time of sorrow. So these are some things I think that we need to keep in mind. And then finally, let me just say that in times of sorrow, pray to God. In times of sorrow, pray to God. In fact, that's the very point that is made in, actually I say Proverbs, it should be Psalm 50, verse 15, where there the Lord says, "In the day of trouble, call upon me, and I will rescue you. Call upon me in the day of trouble, and I will rescue you." And so we need to call upon God. Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 7, cast all your anxiety upon him because he cares for you. You know, here's what happens to us so many times. There's a lot of times when things are going good in our life, that's when we kind of forget about God. We get up in the morning and we're going to work and we're excited about this and we're going to be doing this today. And so we're focused in upon that and we never give God a thought. Don't pray to him. Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. We said the prayer over our post-toasties, you know, that we always say. Just sort of a routine prayer, you know. But we didn't really pray to him. We didn't really talk to him. But in a time of sorrow, where we're kind of brought to our knees, well, that's sometimes the perfect posture for prayer, isn't it? And sometimes we need that because we've not been praying to God the way that we should. Now, here's the mistake that a lot of people make. They kind of have a little bit different kind of problem there. Their prayer life is real good whenever things are good. They pray to God every day when their life is going great. And they're just a great Christian and their life is wonderful. And then when the calamity comes, then what happens? Well, then they stop praying. And a lot of times that's what we can do. And again, it's kind of that attitude that, well, is this what serving God gets me? You know, I mean, look at this, you know, and then let me play the poor, pitiful me card, you know. And so what we need to do is to recognize that sometimes it may very well be, as the Hebrew writer says in Hebrews chapter 12, that God is disciplining us the way a loving father disciplines his children. And God, yes, puts some travail on us and allows us to go through things. It may not be even because we've made poor decisions. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But even so, God allows us to go through certain things, and he's disciplining us and honing us if we'll just recognize that. And instead, what happens to a lot of us is that when we go through those times of difficulty, well, then we stop praying to God. I don't know how many times I've tried to counsel with people who are going through some calamity in life, and you ask them the question, have you been talking to God about it? And again, they hang their head in sorrow, and you know, no, it doesn't do any good, and you know, they come up with all that kind of stuff. And so basically, think about that. If that's you, or if that's me, what we're doing is we're indicating to God, okay, Lord, I'm going to serve you as long as everything's going real good. But when you throw me a curveball and things go bad, well, that's when forget you. You remember what the book of Job teaches? That Satan was accusing Job of before the Lord. He said, Lord, Job, that you're so proud of, the one whom you're so proud of, he's only serving you because you bless him. Well, that's, as you just see in the book, that was a false accusation about Job. Job proved himself that, no, that was not correct. He was not serving God simply because God was blessing him, because even in times of sorrow, he did not rage at God and curse God. Now, he grew as a result of his travail, and the book of Job teaches that, but the accusation against Job that he's just serving God because God does good things for him, and if God allows him to go through times of sorrow, he will turn away and curse God, that turned out to be a false accusation from Satan in regard to Job. But is Satan making that same charge about you and me? Is that what Satan is saying to the Lord even now? Well, you know, Marty Pickup, you know, Lord, you give him some travail, you know. He's going to quit serving you. Is that what Satan's saying about you? See, it's when we're in that time of sorrow and travail, that's when we need to be praying to God and talking to God about that. Not turning away from God. Not becoming angry at God. Not saying, well, prayer doesn't do any good. And all we're doing then is just showing how selfish we are. And we're really just serving God because of what I get out of it. Not because he's God and because he deserves to be served. You see the difference in all that? And maybe the reason sometimes, again, we can't read God's mind and know what God is doing in all this, but maybe sometimes the reason why God is continuing to allow us to go through this travail and maybe even allowing that travail to go on and on a little bit longer, a little bit longer, is maybe because we still haven't learned anything from that like he intends for us to learn. Could that be true? In times of sorrow, pray to God. The psalmist said, call upon me in the day of trouble. Peter said, cast all your anxiety upon him because he cares for you. So what we've been saying in these thoughts this morning and tonight, it's sad times that we all go through, and how to deal with these sad times in a constructive way. So I hope these things that we've said and these two lessons will be helpful to you. Thank you so much for listening to me. I wonder if there's someone here tonight who needs to respond to the gospel in some way. Can we assist you in doing that? Whatever be your need. Won't you come together we stand and sing this song of encouragement?